listening to Real Talk SLP with your host, Felice Clark, the Doubling Speechy. This is a show to help speech pathologists navigate the SLP world with real-life stories to celebrate therapy successes and how to persevere when failure comes knocking on your door. You're listening to the Real Talk SLP podcast show with your host, Felice Clark, the Dabbling Speechy, and we are on episode number 7. I'm so excited to have you guys here today because the person that I'm having on the show is someone who I think is just a great, genuine person. She really cares about her kids and helping other SLPs. And I really respect her as a clinician. And today she is coming on. We're going to be talking about her personal journey with being a speech pathologist and a mom to one of her children who has an expressive language disorder. And I thought it would just be a really honest, real topic to discuss because I know there's SLPs out there that are dealing with this right now. They're a speech pathologist and they are noticing that their child isn't developing as maybe some of their siblings or as other kids around them. And it's really hard to navigate what to do and all the feelings that you feel. So I wanted to bring on my friend, Nicole Allison from the Speech Peeps, just to interview her and hear her story. I was really touched by a couple blog posts that she wrote. So let's get to that interview now. I think you're really going to enjoy it. She has so much wisdom and she was really great to talk with. This is the Real Talk SLP podcast show with your host, Felice Clark, the Dabbling Speechy, and you are listening to episode number 7. Today, I have my good friend, Nicole Allison from Speech Peeps. She's a school-based SLP who primarily works with elementary age students. I know she used to have K to high school. She was the only SLP in her district. I'll have to find out if that's still the case. But today I wanted to have her on because she is a speech pathologist. She has 3 children at home and runs a successful blog when she's not working in the schools. And she has run into a situation where one of her children was exhibiting some speech and language delays. And she wrote about it in a blog post that I thought was really cool because she was very transparent about sharing her feelings and how she was handling the situation. And I wanted to have her on because I know there's a lot of SLPs who are dealing with this. Like, how do you be a mom and how do you be a speech pathologist when your child maybe is exhibiting speech and language delays or has a disability? So I'm super excited to have her. You definitely need to check out her website. She has a lot of evidence-based resources that align with Common Core and can help make your life easier for when you have to do assessments. She's got a lot of screeners and curriculum-based assessments that really give you that confidence to make those clinical decisions. So I'm super excited. So welcome, Nicole.
Thank you so much for having me on, Felice. For those that don't know, I've actually been fortunate to meet Felice several times at different ASHAs. So we're actually pretty good friends. And when I heard you were doing a podcast, I was so excited because I just feel like you are so genuine. Who you are online is exactly who you are in person. So I'm so excited to be on here chatting with you today.
No, yeah. And I would say the same thing for you too. You're super sweet online and in real life. So it's nice to call you a friend many states away from each other because Nicole is from Ohio and I'm from California. So it's a blessing to get together like once a year to see each other. So before we get started on the topic, would you like to share a little bit about your job setting and things that you really like about your job as an SLP?
Yeah. So I worked in a public school for 5 years, and then I had a baby and I went to part-time. And then I had another baby and another baby. I currently work in a private school part-time. And then I see a student in my home for therapy. I actually just finished with her today, right before this. And I've always worked as the only SLP. So currently I do have grades pre-K through 12. And there's definitely pros and cons to that, but since it's all I've ever done, it's all I ever have really known, and I love it.
Very cool. Yeah, I had to work in a, I've worked with everything too, and it just taught me that I can do everything. I'm not going to do everything perfectly, but I can do it.
Yes, exactly.
So, but today I really wanted to talk about your journey with filling that dual role of being your son's mom and speech therapist. And I know like a couple of years, so December 2017, you wrote a blog post, Why Is It So Hard? And I will link to that in the show notes. But it was a really personal blog post that Nicole opened up about her son's language delay. And I think it got a really amazing response from SLPs that, from reading it. And so if you want to share a little bit about that blog post and what led up to it.
So yeah, definitely. My son Declan never actually really babbled as a baby. So I knew something was up with him. But like so many parents, I just kept thinking, let's give it more time. Around a year, he still wasn't making many sounds. But again, I was kind of in this limbo waiting stage. So then at his 18-month checkup, I did mention it to his pediatrician, and right away she wrote a referral to our Birth to Three program. In Ohio, it's called Help Me Grow. And at that point, Declan was saying mama and dada, but it was inconsistent, and he would seem to kind of get stuck on whichever word he was saying that day. So he was evaluated then by an intervention team at 19 months and was found to have an expressive language delay. And so he's received intervention for the past year in our home, which is something that's so nice about the Birth to Three program, is they actually come to our home and do the therapy. And it's been such a great learning experience, not only for him, but I think even more for me, because I've never worked with that early intervention caseload, and I've learned so much through this experience on the other side.
Do you feel like you learned more as a mom or as an SLP or both?
Well, I think having that background in speech and language development has just put a whole new spin on it. But then just being a mom, you know, there's just so much learning that goes on. And when you're an SLP and a mom, you can kind of see both sides. So it's been really just an all around helpful learning experience for me, I would say.
That's cool. Yeah. I'm hoping you'll share some perspectives as a parent, because I have perspectives from being a mom and SLP, but my kids are typically developing. So I can only put myself in the shoes of the parent so far, I think. So I always like to hear from parents, but so that leads to my next question. What has been the hardest part of this journey navigating Declan's language delays? As I think you kind of answered it a little bit, but as a mom and an SLP.
Yeah, no. So I think probably one of the hardest things for me is really letting go of those like unfounded expectations. I was actually sitting around a table not too long ago of speech language pathologists with their husbands. We were all at a wedding and we all had small children, and the conversation turned to sort of joking about how advanced you know, all of our kids' language development was, because they all had an SLP for a mom. And I definitely get that, because we are all trained in language development. So we're like, hopefully naturally using appropriate grammar and language, you know, big vocabularies around our children. But having just an SLP for a mom doesn't necessarily guarantee genius language development. So it kind of made me sit back and reevaluate, like, what are my thoughts on this? And as a mom who's an SLP whose child isn't, you know, developing typically, you know, we can't just expect it to just naturally happen. And so I think sometimes we can get so focused on the nurture side, because that's what our job is that nurture and teaching and everything, that sometimes we forget that nature side. And embracing the entire child for who they are. So that's kind of what I've had to learn and navigate. And it's been hard, because you do have expectations of things.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I even have had such similar conversations with some of my speech therapy friends, but it's more on the, we should know what the heck we're doing. We have master's degrees. And I'm over here with like so much behavior training And we're all, you know, we feel like why is parenting so hard, even with typically developing children? And then when you're navigating, you know, because every kid has their own unique flavor of the way they need to be disciplined, the way that they learn language, the way that they play. Exactly. So it's the books don't tell you everything. Right. Yep. So, but yeah. So what advice would you give to other SLPs that are concerned with their child's speech and language development? And then what was one helpful outlet or support you included in your life during this time when you were feeling uncertain about, you know, Declan's therapy and the process with all that?
I would definitely say that if you are concerned, to mention it and look into getting your child evaluated. And, you know, yes, you'll probably have to explain to family members who say, but aren't you a speech therapist? Why can't you just work with him? Because I have had that. And you'll have that probably as well. But I think an outside opinion is just so important. And I always say, you'll never think, why did I get my child evaluated so early when he was just fine? What you'll probably say instead is, why didn't I do this earlier? So I would say, if you're concerned, even just for peace of mind, you know, look into getting a second opinion. We actually just had Declan's second evaluation. He just turned 2.5. And now he has about 30 to 40 words at 2.5. And sometimes even as an SLP parent, it's really hard to know how much a child knows when they have an expressive language delay. And it's really hard when not to compare when you have like other children who are high in that area. My two girls are very verbal. So this we just had his last evaluation and he still, you know, it still revealed an expressive language delay, but it also revealed that he was in the 95th percentile for his auditory comprehension, his receptive language. So just having those numbers gave me such peace of mind. And I'm just so glad that we, you know, had another evaluation because that just really helped me, just give me some peace there. He's understanding everything. It's just taking a while for him.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, and that's a good sign too, that he has really high receptive language skills. Mm-hmm. And you can cater to that and play to that strength too when you have those numbers.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Yeah. So as an educator, like what have you learned from this experience about how you want to interact with parents as the educator? Like what things went really well for you from the parent side, and how does that translate over with how you're going to interact with parents with their children when they have, you know, an assessment come up and you're presenting information at meetings? Like, what did you like? Was there anything that was a struggle for you?
Yeah, I'm so glad I've actually had this experience because, like I said, I think I've learned so much. The first thing is I always, I say start with a student's strengths. You know, they all have them and they have a lot of them. So I start every meeting letting the parents know how much I love working with their child, even the really difficult ones, and how I look forward to their session every week. I think parents need to know that. So I think just starting with this attitude makes it easier then to transition into that needs part. And, you know, a lot of times they're pretty familiar already with the needs that their kids have. Another thing is I think I've really adjusted my thinking since I've had kids, because I'm going to be honest here. And before I had kids, I could be a little bit judgy. You know, you're always the best parent until you have kids. So I think instead of assuming the parent isn't working with the child at home, and just throwing a bunch of ideas and lists for the parent to work on at home, now I explain what we're working on in the session, and I ask kind of how I can come alongside them and support them, like with what they're already doing at home. And I think this turns it in a better approach and that more of that teamwork partnership approach. And then my other thing is and this is just a really practical tip that I've always done in my meetings, is I always try to sit beside the parent instead of across the table from the parent. And I share my copy of the paperwork with them. So I'm sitting across from the parent and I have my printed copy of the evaluation or the IEP or whatever. And this way the parent can kind of look off of my copy and we're on the same page. And I know that we're on the same page instead of them trying to flip through across the table and try to find what page I'm on. And I've even had in my experience a few non-reading parents. And so, because I worked with a caseload that had a lot of very low socioeconomic kids. And so some of their parents didn't read. And so instead of just saying, sign at the bottom, and they have no idea what to do, if I'm sharing that paperwork with them, I can say, if you agree, you can sign here and point exactly to where they need to be on the paper. So those are just, some practical things that I've learned, but that I feel like my parents really appreciate when I'm in those meetings too.
Yeah, I do some things. I do a lot of the similar things that you do. And I've noticed that for some of my parents, if I feel like I'm going to do a big change or the testing's revealing like they might not qualify, or even if I don't know what their concerns are, I try to get the case manager or myself, whoever has time. But I have gut feelings about ones that I really need to connect with before the meeting and just call them and talk with them and listen to them and find out if there are any concerns, or I get their feedback about what goals they're, wanting at home, just so like they know that I don't just, it's a team decision. It's team approach. And like, let them know, here's what we're going to talk about during the meeting. And here are some things that are going to come up and we're going to discuss service delivery, So I give them a little bit of a heads up. So that way when they're in the meeting, it doesn't get heated, because it's already, I think it's a delicate situation, because you have to be vulnerable, parents have to be vulnerable. We're talking about their child. Right. And it can be uncomfortable. I think it would be uncomfortable for me. I'd be nervous, about what these people are going to say about my child. So
this is your like heart on the line,
right.
Very near and dear. So for sure.
Yeah. And I agree. I was a really great parent too before I had kids. And then
is that work?
Well, yeah, you just think like, well, just make him put his shoes on, right?
Yes. I had many of those kind of thoughts.
My kids will never have a tantrum in the grocery store. Yeah. So now I have a lot more empathy for that, because my kids have embarrassed me plenty of times. So
yeah, there's nothing more humbling than.
Yeah, my kids. Yeah, they do really amazing things, and then all of a sudden you're like, "Did you just say that?" Yep. But so I wanted to know, and you kind of talked about this a little bit, but if you had any other strategies or tips that you use to make sure you're having an empathetic conversation about your student's strengths and weaknesses with the parent. Like, are there certain phrases that, like, ways that you phrase things or little things that you do?
So I think just the most important thing is to listen. It's so easy for us to jump in with all sorts of advice and tips, but in reality, we have to remember that the parent is the expert. So I always try to ask questions about what some things that a student is interested in, hone in on those strengths, and then maybe even like guide the conversation by asking things like, what do you think would happen if you try this at home, what we're doing exactly like in therapy at this, at home, or I've been doing this in therapy and it seems to really click. Would you like me to send you home this activity to continue doing it? And I think, just getting on that same page really does promote a partnership rather than like, two different people. We have the same exact goal for the students and the child.
Right. And you're inviting them into the process rather than telling them this is what they have to do.
Right.
That's a good strategy. So does your SLP that works with Declan, like, does she give you little homework to do with Declan, or does she just kind of give you some tips, or, and does she make it manageable, or what does she provide that has been helpful?
Oh my goodness. This is hilarious, actually. She has printed off so many things from Teachers Pay Teachers where I'm like, oh my goodness, I know them. a lot of Courtney's, they're almost like they're apraxia cards. So started off with like CV and VC cards, and just doing some of those at home. But it's hilarious when she like prints me off something and then I look and see who it's from. I'm like, oh, I know that person. I follow them on Instagram.
Does she give you some helpful handouts from Jenna Rayburn?
Right. Oh, yeah. Yes. There's another one. She gave me a packet over the summer from one of Jenna's packet or activities. And I just got a kick out of it. I'm like, ah, these are people I know. This is pretty cool.
I know. Yeah, I have her helpful handouts, and they really are helpful for parents. Yeah,
they really are.
Because it's like easy to do tasks. And so that doesn't overwhelm you when she gives you little things to do.
No. I'm glad she does, because like I said, I haven't worked with this population. And so, I'm learning, and I think the best thing to do is just always learn in any situation. So no, I'm not bothered at all by that. She can be the expert, and I will glean whatever information I can from her. She is so good. They have such a good relationship, and he looks forward to his speech time every single week. So, she does a really good job.
So this is my real talk question for you. Do you do the homework every week?
And I have to admit, no, I don't do the homework every week. We actually had to take a break over Christmas because I found myself drilling him so much, and he was just getting really burnt out. Like, communication is very hard for him, and it was just not working. He was not wanting to try things for mom. So I had to kind of take a step back and stop the constant drilling, like, say this, say this, say this. So now I have to try to find like sneaky ways to thing. Like, we'll read a book, and at the end, like, especially a book that he knows really often, like Curious George, we read a lot, The Man with the Yellow, and he can say the word hat. So I always pause at that point and he finishes the sentence. So like, I try to sneak in things like that instead of constantly saying, what is this? What is that? Say this, say that. Because it wasn't helping with his personality. He was just getting really frustrated. So no, I haven't always done the homework, but I do try to do it when I can.
Well, I only ask because I know the struggle's real just to get my own kids' homework done. Yeah. And then, yeah, I always tell parents that too. Like, here's some homework. It's like hard to translate. Like, here's some homework. I really would love if you could do it. But if you don't, like, I don't want you to beat yourself up over it either. But I also don't want you to think that it's a slide or a pass. But, but I know that it is hard because there's so many, and there's a lot of other important things like going to the park or doing sports or, you know, cooking, different things with your family that I think are just as meaningful. Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, but before we end this podcast episode, I wanted to talk about, you wrote a blog post called My Child Isn't Talking Now What? And you talked about some guilt that you were feeling. And I wanted to know if you would share about the guilt you felt when you found out about Declan's language delay and how you I don't want to say overcame those feelings, but just ways that you worked through those feelings to get to a place where you felt peace about everything.
Well, man, I think parenthood just comes with so much guilt in general. I think everyone and their brother has some advice for a parent, whether you choose to stay at home or work, whether you breastfeed or bottle feed, co-sleep or let them cry it out, like, especially when a child isn't developing on the average timeline, I think the guilt just increases. And the best advice I ever received as a parent was to study your child. And with Declan, like, for me, I'm guessing that even once he does start communicating more, he'll probably always be a quieter kid. That's just sort of his personality. He doesn't like any spotlight on him. Or attention. Like, he will not dance and doesn't even like music on because he doesn't like doing anything that makes people look at him. Instead, he loves to build. Like, he will sit and build elaborate structures out of anything. Whereas my two girls are the opposite. They chat and talk and dance all day long if they could. So I've kind of had to study each child in order to do what's best for them, not for their sibling or, you know, the neighbor down the street or even the child that I see on social media. I can't compare. So I think seeing and appreciating who they were created to be has been freeing for me and has also allowed me to just have more fun with each of them by embracing, you know, their unique gifts and strengths. So that's kind of how I look at it. And, you know, I wouldn't change anything about his personality because that makes him who he is. So when I think about the whole picture like that, it kind of helps me push through some of those feelings.
That's good advice. And I try to have a gratitude list of what my kids do. And there's certain parts of their personality that I think make things easier in life. And so you kind of want them to act like, I want you to be like this instead of just who they are, because it goes better with, you know, the flow of the day. Like my daughter Hannah is like super outgoing. So going into kindergarten was like a breeze. And it's nice to have that because it's like, oh, I don't have to worry about that. She does really well. Where my son was a little bit shyer, and it's like trying to celebrate the special parts of each of them and that it's okay to be different. So that's good advice. Well, so thanks so much for sharing about this. I think it's going to be really helpful for SLPs that are trying to navigate those two roles, because I know I would struggle with it because I'd want to be the SLP all the time instead of a mom too. Yeah. So thanks for tuning in, everyone. And I will link some blog posts that I referenced that Nicole wrote about. And of course, you can always find Nicole Allison on Teachers Pay Teachers. And see you next week.
Well, there you have it. That was my interview with Nicole Allison. It was really great. I hope it was supportive and gave you some feedback and insight on what it's like to be a parent of a child with a speech and language disorder. And then if you are a speech pathologist with a child with special needs, I hope this brought you comfort and just a sense of community that you're not the only one out there. So thank you, Nicole, again, for being open and vulnerable and sharing about your journey. Until next week, I will see you guys later.